Welcome to Making Connections, a WMMT series on diversifying our future.
There's a small triangular spur of flat land right off the main highway near St. Charles, Virginia, squeezed between the road, a steep wooded hillside, and Straight Creek, which flows into the North Fork of the Powell River. The plot might just be an acre and a half in size, but as AmeriCorps Vista volunteer Katie Comender told me on a recent winter afternoon, a remarkable transformation is taking place there.
Well, there's blueberries all in here, and black raspberries, American persimmons, and some plum trees. We have American hazelnut. We have pawpaw trees, like I mentioned, elderberries. And, you know, some of the species, like elderberry, for instance, those will produce fruit. But some of the other species we have in here, like buttonbush and silky dogwood, they won't. But, I mean, they'll be pretty and they'll look nice for the park.
We were in a field of freshly planted trees and shrubs, where around us, students and community volunteers were at work planting more, putting the finishing touches on the brand new Stone Creek Outdoor Classroom, which will open officially this spring. Just a few years ago, though, this property looked about as different as it possibly could. For decades, an old abandoned coal tipple complex of buildings and equipment sat here unused and falling apart. Bruce Miles is a retired expert in mine reclamation, and he has been a part of the transformation effort.
It was history, though, you know, the tipple and the coal industry and all, but it was also a problem, an eyesore. And it was a hazard, too, because they were some old buildings, old structures that people could get hurt, injured.
Coal tipple sites, transfer stations, they were throughout this region. That's how, you know, they would get the coal down from the mountains and they would meet the train here and they would load it on.
Nicole Vashon Hanlon works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and she's been involved with this project since the initial discussions took place in the mid-2000s. She said to make this work, it's taken the cooperation of a lot of different partners with the same vision.
So I'm sure there's other tipple sites throughout here, but this was one that was a very visible site. The owners were approached to purchase it, and it was a lot of partners, the Powell River Partnership with Daniel Boone Soil and Water Conservation District and DMME, like I mentioned. They all like kind of worked together to try to say, we could make this better.
Because this site was not eligible for cleanup funding under the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, it was up to a private group to lead the effort. So the Upper Tennessee River Roundtable, or UTRR for short, got involved. UTRR is a nonprofit community group that addresses water issues throughout Southwest Virginia, and they partnered with a broad group of private and governmental agencies to buy the property, tear the old buildings down, and convert the space into an outdoor classroom and public park. The classroom will serve as an interactive setting for student groups of all ages to learn about scientific and environmental issues, especially those specific to Central Appalachia. But before it could be fit for students, UTRR Director Carol Doss told me there was a lot of cleaning up to do.
When we actually got, we bought the land, it had, yeah, it still had the office building, it still had all this old metal pieces, loading and unloading equipment. And plus, it hadn't been used for years, so a lot of things had fallen over, and there was an old bridge abutment down by the stream, an old fence, you know, just a variety of stuff. There was even coal here still. When we got it, it was just, yeah, kind of cluttered.
Aside from just being an eyesore, there were several ways in which the old tipple was harming the environment, particularly the creek and the watershed. Because they were building a classroom, they addressed these problems as they worked, in order to show future student groups both common water issues and possible solutions. One of the more serious issues they encountered came from part of an old bridge that had been left in the creek and was causing serious erosion of the stream bank, which in turn was causing high levels of sedimentation to flow into the water. Heavy sedimentation in streams can contribute to a number of problems, including flooding and making the water more difficult to treat for drinking. As Nicole told me, it can also choke out aquatic life.
Sediment is one of the biggest pollutants that we have for the streams right now. it's natural in a stream system, but when you have too much, it can cause problems for filling in. It changes the hydrology, but it also affects the habitat for the fish and for the macroinvertebrates that live in the water that the fish eat. So if you like to fish, you need those macroinvertebrates too, like dragonfly nymphs and damselfly nymphs. And there was a lot of deposition sedimenting into the stream from where that abutment was, and it was all bare bank.
So they hauled off the old bridge and rebuilt the stream bank from the 90 degrees to which it had eroded into a more gradual slope. To help hold the dirt in, they terraced the new bank, stuffed it with old tree roots, and covered it in biodegradable netting. To strengthen the bank even further, they planted what is known as a riparian buffer on top, vegetation that will create roots to help hold the bank in place.
And on the top layer here, we have these students helping us to plant pawpaw trees and persimmon. And then we also have some other plants that are along throughout this corridor, the riparian corridor along the stream. Hazelnuts, persimmon, pawpaw, elderberry, witch hazel. All of these things on the buffer and the stream restoration are all meant to help stabilize the bank so we have less erosion going into the stream.
They could have used any kind of vegetation to hold the stream bank together, but thanks to a partnership with a nonprofit called Appalachian Sustainable Development, they were able to use non-timber plants that were either edible or had other uses. Katie Comender has worked on this part of the classroom, and she told me that in addition to providing free food access for wildlife and community members, they also hoped to set an example for a way that landowners with streams on their property might be able to protect the water supply and possibly even make some extra money at the same time.
The non-timber forest product riparian buffers benefit the environment because they're reducing pollution from entering the creek, they're providing wildlife habitat and food, they're reducing sediment erosion from the stream bank. They're doing all these great environmental things, but because they're edible products or medicinal products, for instance, that can be harvested and sold, it's also an economic benefit to the landowner. So in my mind, economic incentives and environmental incentives and benefits can totally merge. And when they do, I mean, that's the whole beauty of this project. I think that's why it makes it work.
They addressed other environmental problems at the site, too. To help filter runoff, they built a small-scale wetland on the property and installed permeable walking paths and parking surfaces. And to cover asbestos and other contaminants left from the old buildings, they brought in 2 feet of brand new topsoil. But as Carol and Nicole told me, just addressing environmental issues is one thing, but the heart of this project lies in being able to share these solutions with the community and to create a space that all can enjoy. Particularly, the classroom hopes to engage local students in environmental issues in an exciting, hands-on way.
Kids, you know, they just learn, I think, really well outside. You know, just experiencing nature, getting out, doing something different than just sitting in a classroom all the time. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just one day, you know, every now and then. It just seems like it's really, if you go to a place like this and you learn about nature, you just start connecting.
I mean, I think when you bring them out, then they gain understanding. As I'm teaching them about the stream bank, putting the fabric down, I'm explaining why we're retaining the sediment so that we have better water quality, because you might want to fish, or somebody you know might want to fish, you know, like making it really relevant. I think it's great that these young people are here today because one of the challenges when you create an outdoor classroom, park, recreation space is that you want the people who are going to use it to be involved. And so each of the young people are planting at least one tree so that they can come back and that's their tree, that they can come back and see how it's growing. And I think taking ownership of a place is really important.
The students I met who were out volunteering their time to help create the classroom all seemed to embody the hopes Carol, Nicole, and everyone involved had for the space. They had fun, learned some things, and are excited to come back. Hannah Allen is a local high school student.
I had a lot of fun. I learned how to plant the living stakes and put them in the ground and how to make sure the trees grow.
Yeah, I lived in Keokie since I was born and raised, so I passed through here about every day when I had to come to town.
Madison Pennington was another student out planting trees.
Just broken down, hadn't been used in years, and now it looks like it's changed a whole lot since last time.
Madison told me she wants to keep coming back to volunteer at the outdoor classroom because she feels like it's a positive thing for the community.
Well, there's not many places around here for families to get together that's safe, and anybody could have come in here and got hurt, and this is a good place for people to come to get out of the house instead of sitting in the house all the time and actually doing something together, working together.
Carol thinks Madison is right. As communities throughout the mountains try to find ways to deal with declining economies and populations, projects like this one that create spaces where people can come together could help improve the quality of life for people in mountain towns and might even help bring new blood to the region.
But as far as, yeah, keeping people here, bringing people here, you've got to have something for people to do. You know, this is a place people can go, be outside, enjoy it. So I think it is helping. I would hope so.
Tim Miles works with the Daniel Boone Soil and Water Conservation District, a state group that has partnered with UTRR on the Stone Creek classroom. He also lives nearby and thinks the project could provide an example for how other communities in the region could deal with abandoned sites like this one.
When people work together in different groups that, you know, what is like a hazard or like an area that sort of seems abandoned or somewhat unused, you know, it can be, you know, once properly addressed or, you know, even with a lot of creativity, you know, can be made into something, you know, that could be appreciated and, you know, help benefit the area.
The site won't officially open until the springtime, but Bruce Miles and everyone else I met felt that regardless of how many students are able to come and learn, or how many community members end up using the park, the project has already done a world of good.
Well, as a friend up the road here said one day, he said, "You really made that place look good." So I remember what it used to look like. And he said it's been improved 100%. I'd say that they were glad to see it gone.
For more on the work of the Upper Tennessee River Roundtable, you can find them on Facebook or at upperTNRiver.org. For more on the Stone Creek Outdoor Classroom, you can visit our website, WMMT.org, for links and photos. Reporting for WMMT, I'm Parker Hobson.
Making Connections is brought to you by WMMT, Mountain Community Radio. Find out more at makingconnectionsnews.org.